What if the greatest gift you could give someone wasn't your money, your advice, or your time, but your attention? What if behind every quiet smile, every awkward silence, and every passing glance was a hidden world waiting to be understood? In a world obsessed with speed, we've forgotten how to pause. In a society that teaches us how to impress, we've forgotten how to truly connect. We spend our lives around people, friends, family, coworkers. Yet how many of them do we truly know? Not just their opinions, not just their resume, but their inner landscape, their fears, their memories, their quiet hopes. David Brooks, in How to Know a Person, doesn't just show us how to ask better questions. He invites us to become better humans, to listen not just with our ears, but with our hearts, to go beyond small talk and discover the vast emotional universes living inside every single person we meet, including ourselves. This audiobook summary isn't just about learning a method. It's about reclaiming the lost art of seeing people deeply, honestly, and with compassion. So if you're ready to stop skimming the surface of your relationships, if you're ready to become the kind of person who lights others up just by being in the room, then press play, open your heart, and let's begin. Chapter 1. The Longing to Know and Be Known. From the very outset of How to Know a Person, David Brooks invites us into a deep, universal human yearning, the need to be understood and recognized for who we truly are. We all carry within us a rich, complex inner world made up of stories, struggles, desires, doubts, and memories. Yet many people move through life feeling unseen, misunderstood, or reduced to shallow snapshots labeled by their roles, their titles, or their resumes instead of recognized in their full depth. This feeling of anonymity, of being misunderstood, lies at the center of human loneliness and disconnection. Brooks underscores how, in a world increasingly driven by technology, speed, and surface-level interaction, we lose the ability, or sometimes we simply forget, how to appreciate the rich interior lives of the people we encounter. We rush past each other, exchanging brief messages or glances, without pausing to appreciate who the person in front of us really is. But the ability to know a person to appreciate their soul is not some ineffable, mysterious trait. It's a skill, an art, something we can learn and practice. It starts from a deep curiosity about the human condition and a genuine willingness to move past judgment and view people through a different, more compassionate lens. Brooks argues that we need to move away from an efficiency mindset, where we treat conversations as transactions and relationships as means to an end toward a humanistic mindset, where we appreciate people for their own sake. That means honoring their unique stories, honoring their struggles and triumphs, honoring their doubts and disappointments. It means entering a conversation not to manipulate or extract information, but to connect and learn. This change in mindset, from utility to curiosity, is a powerful first step towards seeing people more accurately. It transforms ordinary exchanges into rich, soulful encounters. Instead of asking questions simply to keep a conversation going, "Where are you from?" or "What do you do?" we learn to ask questions that illuminate character. Who influenced you most in your life? What obstacles have you overcome? What sparks you? Questions that cut through the surface and unveil the person's hidden depths. This approach is not about prying or interrogating. It's about honoring. It signals to the other person, "I care about you. Your story matters. Your struggles, your choices, your passions, all of it is worth understanding." It transforms conversations into journeys of discovery, where we appreciate the rich texture of a person's soul. How we view people profoundly influences how we treat them. If we view people as shallow, simple, or easily labeled, we will respond to them in shallow, simplistic ways. But if we view people as rich, multi-layered, and worth exploring, we will treat them with curiosity, patience, and compassion. That, in turn, brings out the best in them. It invites them to unveil their true selves instead of closing up or putting up defenses. This deep view of people also has a powerful moral dimension. It expresses a form of love, a recognition of the inherent worth and dignity of each person. It says, "Your story, your struggles, your character, all these things matter profoundly." It rejects the view that some people are worth more than others, or that we should ignore those who seem different from us. Instead, it affirms the universal human worth that lies within everyone. Chapter 2: The Power of Curious Listening. As we move into the second chapter of How to Know a Person, David Brooks focuses on a powerful, yet profoundly neglected human ability, the ability to listen with deep curiosity. This kind of listening is not a passive process. It's an active, purposeful, and intimate form of engagement. It's a way of honoring another person's experience by choosing to be fully present and fully engaged when they speak, not letting your mind wander, not formulating your own responses while they talk, not interrupting or shifting the conversation back toward yourself, but simply letting their words, their stories, and their emotions become your center of attention. Curious listening starts from a place of true curiosity, a deep, sincere interest in understanding who this person is and how they came to be who they are. It means letting go of your own judgments and agendas and entering into their world with an attitude of exploration. This kind of curiosity signals to the person you're listening to: your experience matters. Your perspective is worth understanding. It transforms conversations from exchanges of information into journeys into another soul's unique universe. In this chapter, Brooks underscores a key principle. We learn the most about people when we ask the questions. We typically avoid questions about their struggles, their doubts, their disappointments, not just their successes and achievements. Most of us are comfortable staying on the surface. We find it awkward or threatening to venture into vulnerability. But it's precisely in vulnerability that we find the rich texture of a person's character, their ability to persevere, their hidden disappointments, their deep passions. To practice curious listening, Brooks suggests framing questions that illuminate this hidden world. Instead of "How's your job?" we might ask, "What's the hardest part of your work?" Instead of "Where are you from?" we might say, "Who were the people who shaped you growing up?" Instead of "What do you do?" we might ask, "What's a challenge you overcame that made you who you are today?" This kind of inquiry signals a willingness to move past the shallow and into the deep, to connect soul to soul. Curious listening also involves careful observation, not just words, but tone of voice, pauses, body language. The person may say, "I'm fine," while their face tightens or their hands tremble. A curious listener picks up on these signals and finds gentle, respectful ways to pursue the story beneath the surface. For example, "I noticed you paused there. Can you tell me more about that?" This kind of observation lets people know you're paying close attention, not just to their words, but to their whole person. David Brooks highlights numerous stories in this chapter of people who mastered this ability: journalists, therapists, community leaders, and how much richer their relationships and conversations became once they cultivated curiosity. He points to journalists who, instead of framing questions to extract information quickly, made space for their subjects to reflect, unveil, and express their true selves. He describes therapists who listened without judgment, letting their clients move at their own pace toward understanding and peace. He highlights community leaders who drew people together across divisions by honoring their stories and honoring their dignity. This kind of deep curiosity doesn't come easily in a world that values speed, confidence, and expertise. It requires patience and humility, the ability to admit. We do not know everything, and we need to learn from each person we meet. It means slowing down and letting conversations unfold organically instead of rushing toward a conclusion. It means honoring silence, allowing people space to reflect and respond honestly instead of filling it ourselves. Curious listening transforms not just the people we listen to, but us as well. It expands our view of the world, deepens our understanding of human nature, and makes us more compassionate and wise. When we approach conversations with curiosity instead of judgment, we find hidden stories of suffering, transformation, and hope stories that connect us across different experiences and illuminate the human condition in all its rich complexity. Ultimately, this chapter teaches us a powerful truth. To know a person, we must first become a person who is willing to listen, a person who lets curiosity lead, who finds dignity in every story, and who values understanding over ego. This kind of listening has a transformational power. It converts ordinary exchanges into profound human encounters. It lets people feel recognized, valued, and understood, often for the first time in their lives. And it profoundly expands our own understanding of what it means to be human. Chapter 3: Asking the Right Questions to Reveal a Soul. As we move into Chapter 3, David Brooks focuses on a powerful tool we all have at our disposal, but often underuse: the ability to ask the right questions. Questions are more than a way to extract information. When we ask questions with curiosity and compassion, we illuminate hidden dimensions of a person's character, their passions, doubts, struggles, and values. As Brooks puts it, a well-chosen question can cut through defenses and allow someone to show you their soul. This kind of inquiry starts with a deep curiosity about who someone is beneath their roles and routines. Instead of staying safely on the surface, "Where do you work?" or "Where did you grow up?" we can ask questions that cut straight to the core. Who has influenced you most in your life? What moment challenged you and made you grow? What's a decision you made that profoundly changed your path? These questions aren't meant to pry or put someone on the spot. Instead, they signal a deep willingness to appreciate their unique human journey. As Brooks underscores, asking the right questions is an art. It requires careful observation, vulnerability, and a sincere curiosity. It means choosing questions that illuminate character instead of credentials, struggles instead of successes, motives instead of titles. Such questions unveil not just what people do, but who they really are, their values, their doubts, their passions, their greatest triumphs and disappointments. He highlights a key observation here. People love to talk about the most defining moments in their lives, the moments when their character was formed, when their resolve was tested, or when their view of the world shifted. If you learn to ask questions that help people reflect on these moments, you will come away from conversations with a rich understanding of their soul, a view into their greatest struggles and triumphs, much more than you'd learn from a simple, "What do you do?" or "Where are you from?" Some powerful questions, Brooks suggests, include: "Who made you who you are?" invites the person to reflect on the key people who influenced their character. "What's a moment you're proud of?" allows the person to celebrate their achievements and values. "What's a decision you made that changed your life?" uncovers a turning point in their story. "Who or what do you care about most?" highlights their greatest passions and commitments. "Where do you find happiness or peace?" shows what brings them a sense of serenity and fulfillment. This approach lets people move past small talk and into deep, rich stories that illuminate their character and view of the world. As you practice asking these questions, you'll find conversations become more alive, more intimate, more human. Instead of bouncing back and forth with shallow exchanges, you enter into a kind of exploration, a journey into another person's soul, and this transforms both you and them. The person feels recognized and valued, and you come away enriched by a deep understanding of a fellow human being. In this chapter, Brooks underscores the power of framing questions in a non-threatening, gentle, and respectful way. Your tone, your delivery, and your ability to convey genuine curiosity all affect whether the person feels comfortable opening up. If your questions come across as judgmental, accusatory, or overly probing, the person will withdraw. But if you ask from a place of compassion and curiosity, if you show you care about their story, people will naturally unveil their true selves. Ultimately, this is a kind of loving inquiry. It signals, your life matters enough for me to want to know it. This kind of inquiry not only transforms conversations, it transforms relationships. It brings people closer together, deepening friendships, strengthening marriage bonds, and knitting communities together. It lets us appreciate the rich human diversity all around us, a diversity of stories, struggles, passions, and perspectives, instead of reducing people to roles, titles, or shallow impressions. So this is the power of asking the right questions. It lets us cut through the surface, connect soul to soul, and illuminate the human depths we often miss in daily interaction. This ability to ask, to listen, and to appreciate is a key piece of what it means to truly know a person. Chapter 4: Seeing Beyond Masks and Roles. As we move into Chapter 4, David Brooks focuses on a powerful hurdle we all face when trying to know a person: the masks and roles people wear in daily life. Every person plays roles: parent, worker, friend, caregiver, and we all put on a kind of social mask to navigate these roles. We show the world a curated, simplified version of ourselves. But this mask is not the whole person. It's a protective layer we use to move through the world without vulnerability. To truly know a person, we have to learn to see past these roles and masks and connect with their inner self, their true character and soul. This means we need to be able to cut through the surface and appreciate who a person really is beneath their titles and responsibilities. This isn't about disregarding their roles. Roles do shape us, but about not confusing the role with the person. For example, we might know someone as the manager, or the teacher, or the doctor. But those titles say little about their doubts, their struggles, their passions, or their disappointments. Who are they when the day's responsibilities are finished and the role drops away? To do this, we need to approach people without prejudice or judgment. We need to come to conversations with an openness, a willingness to suspend our own assumptions and allow the person to show us who they really are. This means ignoring the convenient labels we put on people and instead asking ourselves, who is this person deep down, when you lift away their roles? To help illuminate this, Brooks suggests we pay close attention to moments when the person drops their guard, when they become vulnerable, or when their true passions emerge. This might be when they talk about their greatest struggles, or when their face lights up at a particular memory, or when their voice trembles with feeling. These moments unveil the soul beneath the role, the person's true character. He highlights stories of people who seemed distant or shallow at first, a tough executive, a reserved teacher, but who opened up under the right conditions and revealed rich, vivid inner worlds. For the executive, it was a story about growing up poor and developing a deep compassion for struggling workers. For teacher, it was a confession about a lifelong love of art and a regret about not pursuing it. These revelations transformed how their colleagues and friends saw them, not just as roles, but as whole human beings with struggles, passions, and stories. This ability to cut through roles depends on developing a kind of moral imagination, the ability to put ourselves in someone else's shoes and appreciate their unique view of the world. It means honoring their dignity and worth seeing them not as a collection of traits or a function, but as a person made in their own rich and flawed way. Ultimately, this kind of seeing brings us closer together. It lets us form relationships founded on understanding and compassion instead of shallow judgments. It transforms workplaces, friendships, and communities because we start to treat people as people, not roles, and we appreciate their deep, hidden dimensions. So when we move past masks and roles, we discover something wonderful. We find a rich human soul, filled with stories, struggles, passions, doubts, and desires. This view lets us connect more profoundly, appreciate more deeply, and treat each person with dignity and compassion. Chapter 5, The Moral Import of Knowing Another. As we move into Chapter 5, David Brooks underscores a profoundly important observation. Getting to know another person isn't just a nice social habit. It's a moral act. It's a way of honoring their dignity and worth as a human being. It's a form of love, a deep, compassionate form of care that says, your life matters. Your struggles, your stories, and your soul all have significance. This view transforms the way we treat people in daily life. Instead of seeing a cashier, a server, a colleague, or a stranger as a mere means to an end, we view them as an individual filled with rich experiences and unique perspectives. Getting to know them becomes a moral responsibility, a way of honoring their human dignity and affirming their worth. This moral view has roots in many traditions, from classical philosophy to religious thought, which teach us that we should treat people as ends in themselves, not merely as instruments. Martin Buber, a 20th century philosopher, called this I-thou relationship a way of encountering another person in their full personhood, instead of reducing them to an it, a thing. This view resonates with Brooks's central claim. When we know people deeply, we realize we're not separate, isolated creatures. We are profoundly interconnected. We need to be recognized and understood just as much as we need food or water. How we treat people, then, reflects not just our interpersonal skills, but our moral character. Ignoring someone's depth, dismissing their story, or failing to appreciate their struggles isn't a neutral oversight. It's a form of dehumanization. It signals we're unwilling to see their full personhood, that we view them as less worthy of understanding or compassion. Conversely, when we make the effort to know and appreciate someone to view them in their full dignity, we perform a moral act. We validate their worth, and we affirm their place in the human community. This doesn't mean we approve of everything about them or ignore their flaws. It means we appreciate their struggles and their context. We view them through a compassionate, humanizing lens. This view has powerful implications for friendships, marriage, community life, and even political polarization. If we are unwilling to know each other, we remain divided by suspicion and misunderstanding. But when we make the moral effort to connect and appreciate, we find basis for unity, a shared human dignity that crosses lines of ideology, class, and culture. Ultimately, Brooks shows us that getting to know a person is a form of moral recognition, a way of honoring their worth and affirming their place in the human family. This moral view transforms relationships from transactions into deep, rich connections, from seeing people as obstacles or means to an end into seeing them as valued members of a community. Chapter 6, Building Communities of Recognition. As we move into Chapter 6, David Brooks explores a powerful implication of truly seeing and honoring another person. It has the ability to transform not just relationships between two people, but the whole community. When we collectively learn to appreciate each person's dignity and worth, when we move from ignoring or dismissing people to honoring their stories, we create a community of recognition. This kind of community is a place where people feel valued, understood, and supported in their fullest human expression. Brooks underscores that this kind of community is rare in a world increasingly divided and polarized. Too often we withdraw into our own groups, into political tribes, ideology circles, and social media echo chambers, ignoring the rich, human stories of those outside our view. This weakening of communal ties leaves people feeling isolated, misunderstood, and powerless. But when we collectively practice the art of seeing and honoring each person, we reverse this process. We reconnect with each other in a deep, human way. We become neighbors and friends instead of strangers. Creating a community of recognition starts with intentional practices and institutions. This might be a community center where people from different backgrounds come together to talk and learn from each other. It might be a workplace culture where employees take the time to appreciate each person's unique contribution and treat them with dignity and fairness. It might be a church, a civic group, or a book club spaces where people can safely reveal their stories and be recognized in their full human dignity. This communal transformation doesn't happen by accident. It requires intentional effort and a shared moral imagination. We have to collectively agree that honoring each person matters, that we will treat each person we encounter as a rich, purposeful human soul, not a statistic, not a tool, not a vote, but a person with a unique story. This view resonates with the deep human need for belonging and recognition. We all want to be recognized, not just for our roles or achievements, but for who we profoundly are. When communities reflect back to us our own dignity, we flourish, we grow, we find a deep peace in knowing we have a place in the human family. The ripple effects of this recognition can be dramatic. Broken relationships can heal. Prejudices can diminish. Conflict can ease. Political polarization can be bridged by understanding and compassion. When we know people really know them, we find it much harder to dismiss them or treat them unfairly. Ultimately, Brooks shows us that a community of recognition isn't a naive dream. It's a powerful, achievable reality when we collectively practice the moral discipline of seeing and honoring. This discipline starts within us in our daily choices to listen, appreciate, and connect, and then it radiates forward, transforming the institutions we inhabit and the relationships we form. Chapter 7, The Power of Listening Beyond the Surface. As we delve into Chapter 7, we uncover a key ingredient in truly understanding someone, the ability to listen beneath their words. It's not enough to simply hear what people say. We need to appreciate the rich subtext, the hidden emotions, doubts, and desires that lie beneath their stories. This kind of deep listening lets us connect on a profoundly human level. It lets us move past the literal and into the soul of a person. David Brooks highlights a powerful observation here. Most conversations stay safely on the surface. We skim across shallow details, swapping facts back and forth without ever touching on what matters most, the human struggles, anxieties, and hopes that form the core of a person's life. Deep listening means we become a kind of explorer, a compassionate detective, searching for clues in tone, pauses, and body language for all the rich signals that illuminate someone's true self. For example, a person might say, "Work has been tough lately." A shallow conversation would move on quickly. "Yeah, busy time for everyone." But a deep listener would pause and respond, "Tough in what way? Or how has it been affecting you?" This small inquiry signals to the person that their struggles matter, and it invites them to unveil more of their story. Such listening transforms conversations from exchanges of information into journeys of understanding. Instead of simply collecting facts about someone, we come to appreciate their lived experience, their disappointments, their doubts, their triumphs. This makes all the difference in friendships, in marriage, in mentoring relationships, and in every human connection we form. Deep listening also makes us more compassionate, more empathetic, and more wise. When we appreciate what's hidden under the surface, we realize we're all wrestling with something: doubts we may be afraid to voice, disappointments we carry quietly, or struggles we conquer without accolades. This understanding softens us. It lets us treat people with patience and understanding, honoring their journeys instead of dismissing them. Ultimately, listening in this deep, purposeful way brings us closer to people. It lets us form relationships founded on trust, compassion, and authenticity. Instead of staying distant, we draw near. We become a refuge for those who need to be heard and recognized. This kind of connection strengthens friendships, deepens marriage, and knits communities together in a powerful bond of understanding. Chapter 8. Recognizing Hidden Strengths and Silent Battles. As we journey into Chapter 8, we unveil another powerful dimension of understanding people: the ability to see their hidden strengths and silent struggles. Most people carry within them a rich reserve of capabilities and a private world of battles. Some may appear weak or flawed on the surface, yet beneath their doubts lie remarkable fortitude, adaptability, and perseverance. David Brooks highlights that when we learn to appreciate these hidden dimensions, we become more compassionate, more insightful, and more fair in our judgments. Instead of reducing someone to their mistakes or failures, we begin to appreciate the context, the struggles that forged their character, and the hidden resources that kept them going when life pressed hard against them. Picture a colleague who seems unreliable and disorganized. Your first judgment might be that they are lazy or careless. But a deep curiosity, a willingness to look beneath the surface, might reveal something else. This person may be battling an invisible health condition, or managing a heavy caregiver role at home, or wrestling with financial stress. Suddenly, their struggles become an opportunity for understanding, not dismissal. Instead of judgment, you respond with compassion. Instead of rejection, you find ways to support and empower them. This ability to appreciate hidden struggles also lets us celebrate hidden strengths. Some people understate their achievements or avoid the spotlight, not because they lack ability, but because their roles or personalities keep them from drawing attention to their successes. When we learn to look for these hidden triumphs, the small daily wins, the ability to keep going under pressure, the kindness shown to a friend in need, we realize that everyone has something remarkable within them. This view transforms relationships, workplaces, and communities. It lets us appreciate each person for their unique combination of struggles and resources. Instead of a culture of comparison and judgment, we foster a culture of recognition, honoring the human dignity in all, regardless of their roles or accolades. This kind of recognition brings people together, strengthening interpersonal bonds and creating an environment where everyone feels valued. Ultimately, seeing hidden struggles and hidden strengths isn't about ignoring faults or weaknesses. It's about honoring the whole person, their battles and their triumphs, and choosing to respond with understanding and compassion. Chapter 9, Making Others Feel Seen. This chapter turns the focus inward, not on how we understand others better, but on how we become the kind of person who makes others feel seen. In a world filled with noise, speed, and distraction, there's a rare, powerful gift you can offer someone: your complete, undivided presence. It's not about fixing people. It's about being the mirror that reflects their worth back to them. David Brooks describes how people carry around invisible emotional meters, constantly scanning the world, looking for cues. Do I matter to this person? Do they see me as someone with value, or am I just a blur in the background of their life? Those who learn to offer recognition, without agenda or ego, become anchors in other people's lives. They're remembered not for their brilliance or eloquence, but for their ability to make others feel human, valued, and whole. This doesn't require grand gestures. Sometimes it's as simple as noticing. Noticing when someone seems quiet in a meeting. Noticing when a friend's voice lacks its usual energy. Noticing when a stranger's body language tells a story they aren't ready to speak. When you point out that noticing with warmth, you don't seem like yourself today, or that must have taken a lot of courage, you offer people the kind of emotional visibility that is deeply rare and healing. Brooks reminds us that people are often performing emotional labor behind the scenes, staying composed while grieving, staying patient while overwhelmed, staying kind while hurting. When someone recognizes that quiet effort, the effect is electric. They feel seen not for the mask they wear, but for the truth they carry. It makes them feel safe. It opens the door to authenticity. To become this kind of person, you need emotional sensitivity, humility, and generosity. It means pausing your inner monologue long enough to really observe. It means quieting the urge to impress, and instead becoming deeply curious about someone else's inner world. When you do this, you create space for people to open up, not because you ask them to, but because they sense it's safe to be real with you. Making others feel seen is not just a skill, it's a form of quiet leadership. In workplaces, these people build trust. In friendships, they deepen intimacy. In families, they strengthen emotional bonds that hold over time. They shift rooms, not by volume, but by presence. The kind of presence that says, "I'm with you. I see you. You matter." In the end, the most cherished people in our lives won't be the smartest or the most successful. They'll be the ones who made us feel deeply known and accepted when we were most ourselves. Chapter 10. The Art of Eliciting Inner Worlds. In this chapter, Brooks dives deep into the rare and transformative art of eliciting someone's inner world, helping others articulate thoughts they didn't even know they had until they spoke them aloud. It's about drawing out the hidden layers, the unspoken beliefs, the barely understood emotions that define a person's reality. But doing this is not about interrogation. It's about creating a space so safe, so welcoming, that people feel free to explore and express their true selves. To draw out someone's interior world, you must first withhold your own need to dominate the conversation. People often rush to share their opinions, insert a story, or offer advice, but when we do this too early, we interrupt someone else's unfolding self-discovery. The key is restraint, to hold silence like a gift, to listen with the intention to understand, not respond. Brooks explains that certain questions act like keys. They unlock the doors to a person's unseen inner house. They aren't shallow questions like, "What do you do?" or "Where are you from?" They're questions like, "What's something you've changed your mind about recently? What's a belief you've held since childhood that still shapes you?" Or, "When did you last feel completely alive?" Questions like these don't just skim across the surface, they invite excavation. They signal that you're not interested in small talk. You want to step into their world, even the messy rooms. When someone senses your curiosity is rooted in care, not judgment, they'll slowly let you in. And as they do, something sacred happens. They begin to know themselves better in your presence. Brooks calls this process a form of co-creation. You're not just passively listening. You're actively witnessing someone put their soul into words. Their stories take shape because you provided the silence, the interest, and the emotional safety for them to do so. In this way, conversation becomes a form of companionship, not a transaction of facts, but a collaboration of understanding. One of the most overlooked parts of eliciting is nonverbal feedback. A simple nod, a pause before replying, soft eyes, an open posture. These are signals that say, I'm still with you. Keep going. They encourage depth. They affirm vulnerability. They invite more. When we master this subtle art, we stop reducing people to roles, the teacher, the barista, the intern. Instead, we begin to experience the richness behind every label, the grief hiding under smiles, the passion behind a job title, the spiritual hunger behind an ordinary exterior. Ultimately, eliciting someone's inner world is one of the highest acts of respect. It says, I believe there's something beautiful and complex inside you, and I want to help you bring it forward. That's not just connection. That's communion. Chapter 11, Emotional Attunement, The Silent Language of Connection. In Chapter 11, Brooks explores a subtle yet profound concept, emotional attunement. This is the quiet superpower of those who instinctively sense what others are feeling, not because they've been told, but because they're paying attention to the language of the unspoken. This form of connection doesn't rely on words. It's about vibration, feeling the undercurrents of someone's emotional state and responding in a way that makes them feel seen without them having to explain. We've all met someone who says, I'm fine, but their eyes betray exhaustion. Or someone who smiles, yet their shoulders sag with unspoken sorrow. Attuned people don't just hear words. They hear the music beneath the lyrics. They can recognize when a friend needs encouragement, even when they claim they're just tired. They can sense tension in a room before a word has been spoken. They notice when someone withdraws emotionally, even though they're physically present. David Brooks argues that emotional attunement is not a mystical gift. It's a cultivated practice. It begins with quieting your own emotional noise so you can tune into the frequencies of others. It's learning to listen, not just with your ears, but with your eyes, your body, and your intuition. Attunement is less about reading minds and more about reading presence, the subtle shifts in posture, tone, pace, and energy that reveal a person's inner temperature. But attunement also involves knowing what not to do. It's resisting the impulse to correct, dismiss, or fix someone's emotional state. People don't always want solutions. Often, they want resonance, someone to sit with them inside their feeling, rather than standing on the outside, offering advice. When you mirror back someone's mood gently, you affirm their reality. You tell them, I feel it too. You're not alone. Brooks also notes that this practice is essential in intimate relationships. Romantic partners, close friends, even mentors must learn to attune or risk missing vital emotional signals. When attunement fades, people feel emotionally invisible, even when they're physically surrounded. But when it's present, relationships deepen. Conflicts become easier to navigate. Trust forms naturally because the unspoken is finally being heard. Emotional attunement becomes especially powerful in moments of crisis. During loss, change, or confusion, people often lose the words to describe what they're feeling. But a look, a hand on the shoulder, or a quiet presence that matches their mood can communicate more than 1,000 carefully chosen sentences. In these moments, attunement becomes a balm, a stabilizing presence that says, I'm here with you, even in the silence. This skill to meet people where they are emotionally requires practice, humility, and courage. It means letting go of control and becoming fully present in someone else's emotional world. But the rewards are immense. You become the kind of person people trust with their truth. The kind of person who can heal others just by being fully available and fully human. Chapter 12, Seeing People Through Time, Not Just in the Moment. In this chapter, David Brooks invites us to shift our lens. Instead of seeing people as static, fixed in their habits, flaws, or personalities, he urges us to see them as dynamic, unfolding stories. People are not snapshots. They are moving films. What you witness today is just one frame in a much longer reel of transformation, trauma, and triumph. We often judge others by their present behavior: impatient, rude, quiet, insecure. But what if you could see not just what they are right now, but what they're becoming? What if that short-tempered colleague is fighting through a season of grief? What if the shy student is on the edge of discovering their voice? What if the withdrawn friend is gathering strength to make a bold decision? Brooks explains that seeing people through time means recognizing the arc of their evolution. It means being patient with people's rough edges because you believe in their potential to grow smoother. It means remembering that no one is finished and no one should be reduced to their worst day or weakest moment. Human beings are always moving, sometimes forward, sometimes backward, but always evolving. This mindset transforms relationships. When you believe in someone's capacity to change, you interact with more grace and encouragement. You become a source of stability during their chaotic seasons. You remind them of who they're capable of becoming, even when they've forgotten it themselves. Brooks gives the example of great mentors and teachers. They don't just see what's in front of them, they see through the noise, straight into someone's future. They treat people as if the best version of them is already emerging. That belief, that unwavering hope in someone's potential, often becomes the fuel that drives that person to actually change. But this vision isn't only for guiding others, it's also a way of protecting yourself from cynicism. If you constantly judge people by their worst traits, you'll grow bitter and distrustful. But if you see others as evolving souls, you'll approach life with curiosity, hope, and humility. You'll learn to forgive more easily, support more fully, and celebrate more genuinely. To see someone through time also means recognizing the weight of their past, the long path they've already walked. That sarcastic humor might be a shield developed in a tough childhood. That controlling habit might have grown out of past instability. Understanding this helps you respond with compassion instead of condemnation. And finally, Brooks reminds us, you, too, are a work in progress. If you want others to see your evolution, your efforts, your stretching, your becoming, you must offer them the same vision. You must look at others, not with a fixed judgment, but with an open heart. Because when you see people as growing stories, the world becomes softer, richer, and far more beautiful. Chapter 13. Building a Culture of Deep Seeing. In this chapter, Brooks expands the lens from the individual to the collective. He explores how we can build not just personal habits of understanding, but a shared culture where people feel seen, heard, and deeply known. Not occasionally, but as a way of life. This is where relationships turn into communities, and where conversations turn into connection. Most cultures run on efficiency. We prioritize speed, productivity, and performance. In the rush to complete tasks, we often lose sight of the humans we're doing them with. But what if we designed environments where the quality of connection mattered as much as the quality of output? What if being emotionally present wasn't a luxury, but a norm? Brooks argues that such cultures are not accidental, they are cultivated. They are built by people who set a tone, leaders who listen before they direct, friends who check in, even when it's inconvenient, families who make it a point to sit down and share stories, not just schedules. These people become architects of belonging. In workplaces, this means creating rituals of recognition, not just reward, but real acknowledgement. A note of gratitude that says, "I saw how hard you tried." A meeting that begins with a human check-in instead of diving into data. A culture where feedback isn't a cold critique, but a warm investment in someone's growth. In schools, it means treating students not as GPAs or future resumes, but as full human beings with emotional landscapes. It means recognizing the quiet student who shows up every day, the one who listens more than they speak, the one who draws strength from silence. When a student feels known, their desire to learn ignites. When a teacher feels respected, their ability to inspire multiplies. In homes, it's about creating space for people to bring their whole selves to the table. Not just joy, but sorrow. Not just accomplishments, but confusion. Brooks encourages families to ask deeper questions. What surprised you today? What are you carrying that no one sees? What kind of person do you want to be this week? These aren't just nice gestures, they are cultural shifts. They signal that a person's interior world matters just as much as their exterior success. They weave trust, empathy, and presence into the fabric of everyday life. But creating this kind of culture also means addressing what kills connection: cynicism, distraction, and ego. When people believe they won't be understood, they stop speaking. When people feel they're being evaluated instead of accepted, they shrink. Brooks insists that one of the most powerful things we can do is to create emotional safe zones, not perfect, but consistent spaces where people can be honest without fear of being diminished. A culture of deep seeing doesn't require perfection. It requires presence. It requires effort. It requires leaders, friends, and partners who choose to value what's within, not just what's visible. And over time, something magical happens. People bloom in that kind of soil. They risk more, share more, give more. Because they feel seen not just once, but always. Chapter 14, Listening as a Moral Act. In this chapter, Brooks introduces a powerful truth. Listening is not just a communication skill, it is a moral act. In a world where people constantly talk over one another, rush to reply, and weaponize words to win arguments, choosing to listen with depth and care becomes a radical, almost sacred gesture. To truly listen is to say, "I value your inner world. I am willing to make space for your story. I am setting aside my ego so I can meet you where you are." It sounds simple, but few people do it well. Most listen with one ear open and their mind half distracted. They prepare replies instead of absorbing meaning. They hear words, but miss emotion. But Brooks argues that deep listening is something more. It is an act of humility, service, and love. When you truly listen, you become a mirror. You allow the speaker to hear themselves more clearly. You reflect back their meaning, not to analyze or judge, but to understand. And in doing so, you give them permission to expand, to unfold what's been locked up inside. It is in the presence of a real listener that people often speak the most important truths they didn't know they were carrying. Brooks emphasizes that deep listening is rare because it is demanding. It asks for stillness in a noisy world. It requires curiosity over certainty, patience over speed. You can't fake it. People can feel when you're not truly there. But when you are, when you're leaning in with your whole being, the atmosphere changes. Walls fall, masks drop, and something real emerges. He shares how transformational listening can heal wounds that words alone cannot. Listening without trying to fix, explain, or control offers dignity. It says, "You are allowed to feel what you feel. Your experience matters. You are not invisible." Listening also has the power to interrupt cycles of pain. Many people act out of wounds they've never voiced. But when someone finally listens, without interruption or agenda, it's like a pressure valve releases. Pain softens. Anger dissolves. Healing begins not because of clever advice, but because someone chose to be fully present. Brooks notes that listening is especially vital in conflict, it doesn't mean agreeing. It means pausing the instinct to defend long enough to ask, what is this person really trying to say? What fear or value is underneath their position? This shift de-escalates tension. It transforms arguments into dialogues. And it allows us to walk away, not necessarily with agreement, but with understanding. And sometimes, that's enough. To listen well is to become a sanctuary for others. It's to hold space without invading it. To bear witness without needing to direct the outcome. And in a world starving for empathy, the simple act of truly listening might be the most generous gift you can give. Chapter 15. The Invisible Influence of Assumptions. In this chapter, Brooks uncovers a quiet but potent barrier to knowing people deeply. Assumptions. These invisible judgments operate beneath our awareness, shaping how we interpret others before they even speak. We assume what someone believes based on how they dress. We guess their values by the job they hold. We fill in their story before hearing a word from their mouth. This mental shorthand feels efficient, but it often obscures the truth. It creates caricatures instead of portraits. And it prevents us from encountering the full, complex, contradictory humans standing before us. Brooks calls assumptions a kind of intellectual laziness dressed up as insight. We say, "Oh, I know the type," and tune out the rest. But real understanding begins where assumptions end, when we allow someone to surprise us, challenge us, or reveal something outside our expectations. He shares that one of the deadliest assumptions is the belief that we already get someone. This happens often in long-term relationships, spouses, friends, colleagues. We stop asking questions. We stop being curious. And without realizing it, we begin relating not to the person in front of us, but to an outdated version of them we've stored in memory. Brooks argues that to really know someone, we must treat them as eternally unfinished. Even if you've known someone for 20 years, you've never met today's version of them. People grow. Their inner landscapes shift. Their secret dreams evolve. One antidote to assumptions is what Brooks calls radical curiosity. This means approaching each conversation with the humility of not knowing. It means replacing mental labels with open-ended questions. Instead of asking, "Why would they think that?" with suspicion, we ask, "What experience might have led them here?" with wonder. This shift is especially important across lines of difference: race, politics, religion, culture. We tend to flatten people who don't mirror our worldview. But when we step back and recognize our assumptions, we make room for real discovery. We move from judgment to inquiry, from rigidity to connection. Brooks also reminds us that assumptions are often projections of our own fears. When we label someone angry, maybe it's because we're uncomfortable with intensity. When we call someone weak, perhaps we're avoiding our own vulnerability. Knowing people deeply requires us to examine not only who they are, but what we bring to the interaction. Our history, our wounds, our filters. When we drop assumptions, even momentarily, we create space for people to surprise us. We allow room for newness. And in that space, connection isn't just possible, it becomes inevitable. But because the truth is, people long to be seen without a script. They want to be known beyond stereotypes, boxes, and categories. They want someone to say, "I'm not here to decide who you are. I'm here to find out." Chapter 16. The Art of Making People Feel Valuable. In this chapter, Brooks explores one of the most life-affirming skills a person can develop, the ability to make others feel valuable, more than charm, more than intellect. More than even kindness, the feeling that you matter in someone else's eyes is a profound emotional need. And when met, It transforms everything. Brooks begins with a simple yet haunting observation. Most people walk through life carrying the silent question, "Do I matter?" It's hidden beneath the surface, often unspoken. But it shapes how people interact, how they love, how they work, and how they interpret every conversation. When someone makes us feel invisible, dismissed, or irrelevant, it leaves a lasting bruise. But when someone lights up when we enter a room, asks thoughtful questions, and listens without distraction, it's unforgettable. We feel anchored, seen not for what we do, but for who we are. The art of affirming someone's value isn't about empty compliments. It's about precision and presence. It's seeing what's unique in them and naming it clearly. You have a way of calming people down without even trying. I noticed how you took care of the details when no one else was looking. That insight you shared yesterday, it stayed with me. These moments don't require grand gestures. They happen in seconds. But their impact can last for years. They create what Brooks calls identity-confirming interactions. Those rare conversations that remind us of who we are at our best. And here's the beauty. This power isn't reserved for therapists, teachers, or leaders. Anyone at any time can decide to be a mirror that reflects worth instead of judgment. In a world of casual dismissiveness, this becomes a revolutionary act. Brooks also warns about the subtle ways we rob people of this value. Interrupting. Mocking. Shrugging off ideas. Failing to follow up. Every careless act sends a message, "You don't matter enough for me to be careful." And over time, these micro-injuries accumulate, creating emotional distance. But the opposite is equally true. Every time we show interest, every time we hold space for someone's passion, every time we say, "I see you, and I'm glad you're here," we restore dignity. We create connection. We remind people that they carry something of worth. Brooks shares stories of individuals who changed lives, not with brilliance, but with presence. A coach who remembered every player's name. A boss who noticed when someone looked down. A parent who stayed up late, just to hear how the day felt, not just how it went. To make someone feel valuable is to elevate them. To lift them beyond utility, beyond function, into the sacred space of being cherished for simply existing. And perhaps the most beautiful part? When you make others feel valuable, you often begin to feel more valuable yourself. Because seeing the light in others helps you remember your own. Chapter 17. From Transactions to Transformations. In this chapter, Brooks dives into one of the most common traps in modern relationships, the transactional mindset. We move through our days checking boxes, responding to emails, buying coffee, running meetings, exchanging pleasantries, all efficient, all functional. But somewhere along the way, the human spirit is flattened. People become means to ends rather than ends in themselves. The cashier becomes a blur. The coworker, a tool to meet a deadline. Even loved ones get filtered through the lens of, "What can they do for me today?" And yet, Brooks argues, this mindset is the very thing that prevents us from knowing others and ourselves deeply. What we crave isn't just usefulness. We crave meaning. And meaning doesn't live in transactions. It lives in transformations, those rare moments when interaction leads to insight, when something opens inside us because of someone else's presence. Transformative interactions start when we pause long enough to be fully present. When we stop treating people as functions and start treating them as sacred carriers of experience. When we ask questions that reach beneath the surface and stay long enough to hear the real answer. Brooks gives the example of a doctor who, instead of just diagnosing symptoms, asks, "How are things outside the exam room?" Or a barista who remembers a regular's name and notices when their mood shifts. These tiny acts push the relationship from transaction into transformation because they speak to who we are, not just what we need. This shift doesn't require hours of time, only depth of attention. A two-minute conversation, if rooted in real care, can reshape someone's day. A well-placed question can unlock a memory. A glance of recognition can ground someone who feels unseen. Brooks stresses that transformation requires risk. To move beyond the transactional, you have to be willing to be human, to be awkward, emotional, curious, and open. It means letting go of scripts. It means not always having an answer. It means letting the moment breathe. He also emphasizes that transformation is mutual. When we offer someone a safe space to reveal themselves, we often reveal parts of ourselves in the process. Walls come down, defenses drop. And we enter into something richer than routine, something alive, unrepeatable, and deeply real. Brooks warns that modern culture often discourages this. We're told to be productive, efficient, unemotional. But in doing so, we sacrifice the very thing that gives our lives color and depth relationship. Not just contact, but connection. Not just exchange, but transformation. So the question becomes, do we want to live surrounded by transactions? Or do we want to live in a world where each interaction holds the possibility of change? Because ultimately, the way we treat others shapes the reality we all live in. And transformation begins not with grand gestures, but with small decisions. To care. To ask. To stay. To see. Chapter 18, Curiosity as a Daily Practice. In this chapter, Brooks lifts the curtain on one of the most powerful yet underestimated habits of emotionally intelligent people, daily curiosity. Curiosity is often seen as a personality trait, something you either have or don't. But Brooks reframes it as a discipline, a conscious choice that, when practiced consistently, transforms relationships, perspectives, and even the way we experience the world. He argues that the most deeply connected people aren't necessarily the most extroverted or the most articulate. They are the most genuinely curious. They ask better questions. They listen for the unsaid. They treat every person as a universe waiting to be discovered, not a problem to be solved or a stereotype to be confirmed. Daily curiosity means walking into every interaction with a spirit of exploration, even if the context is mundane. It could be a grocery line conversation that starts with, "What's something you're looking forward to this week?" Or a simple, "What made you smile today?" These aren't small talk, they're bridges to the soul. Brooks explains that curiosity is not about interrogation, it's about invitation. It's about creating a space where someone feels safe to go beyond rehearsed answers. And when people sense that your interest is sincere, not strategic, they respond with depth they didn't even know they were carrying. He distinguishes between shallow curiosity, fueled by gossip or novelty, and profound curiosity, which is driven by wonder, humility, and care. Profound curiosity doesn't seek to use information. It seeks to understand people. It's not about being clever. It's about being present. But here's the challenge. Real curiosity requires letting go of certainty. It demands that we set aside our desire to appear knowledgeable. It invites us to say, "I don't know the answer, and that excites me." This shift is uncomfortable for many, especially in a culture that prizes confidence over openness. But Brooks insists that real connection only happens when we let curiosity lead us into the unknown. He also highlights that curiosity is a powerful antidote to judgment. When we judge, we close. When we're curious, we open. And in that openness, empathy flows more freely. Curiosity also has the power to rescue relationships that feels stale or strained. A parent who asks a child, "What part of your day felt hardest?" opens a doorway that wasn't there before. A partner who asks, "What's something you've never told me?" might ignite intimacy that routine has dulled. These questions don't just uncover facts, they rekindle aliveness. Brooks concludes with a simple but profound invitation. Live as if every person has something to teach you, because they do. Approach conversations like you're gathering precious fragments of human truth. Let every day be a classroom and every person a lesson. Because the curious don't just connect better, they live better. They feel more, learn more, and experience the world not as a set of fixed answers, but as an unfolding mystery. Chapter 19. When presence becomes a gift. In this chapter, Brooks illuminates the understated but transformative power of presence, not just being physically near someone, but offering your full attention, your emotional availability, and your undivided humanity. Presence isn't flashy. It doesn't shout. It doesn't perform. But its quiet power can shift the emotional temperature in a room, in a relationship, in a life. To be fully present is to say without speaking, "You are worth my time, my awareness, my now." Brooks observes that modern life fragments our attention. We're constantly pulled in different directions, devices buzzing, minds multitasking, worries tugging us away from the moment in front of us. And yet, the people around us feel this split, this absence. We nod, but we don't hear. We look, but we don't see. But when someone gives us the gift of their presence, we feel it immediately. We feel it in their eyes that don't drift, in the silence that doesn't rush, in the way they lean in, unhurried, making space for us to unfold. Presence requires nothing external, no credentials, no scripts, no impressive vocabulary. It simply requires willingness, the willingness to pause, to notice, and to stay. To say, "You matter enough for me to stop everything else." Brooks shares the story of a grieving friend who, in his deepest sorrow, didn't need advice or solutions, only someone to sit beside him without judgment or distraction. The presence itself was the medicine. In moments of loss, confusion, or vulnerability, presence is more healing than words could ever be. He highlights that presence isn't passive, it's active stillness. It's not about doing nothing, it's about doing only this. Being fully with the person, rather than next to them, while being elsewhere in your mind. Presence is also a practice, something we can strengthen over time. It starts by noticing our own habits of disconnection. Do we reach for our phones when conversations stall? Do we mentally check out when others speak? Do we fill silence too quickly out of discomfort? To be present is to trust the moment enough to stay inside it, even when it's uncomfortable, even when you don't know what to say. Because often, your being there is the answer, not your words. Brooks notes that presence can restore what disconnection has fractured. A parent truly present with a child repairs weeks of emotional distance in a single hour. A leader present in a moment of team anxiety builds loyalty no speech can match. A friend who shows up during uncertainty becomes unforgettable not for fixing things, but for not leaving. Presence communicates what language cannot. I see you. I hear you. I am here with you and I'm not going anywhere. And in a society moving ever faster, ever louder, where presence feels increasingly rare, choosing to be fully with someone is a radical act of love. Chapter 20. Crafting conversations that matter. In this final chapter, Brooks turns to the practical yet profound art of meaningful conversation, not as small talk, not as information exchange, but as a sacred space where two souls meet and transform. He opens with a truth we often overlook. Conversation is how we build the invisible bridges between us. Through dialogue, we weave understanding, foster closeness, and create shared moments that linger long after words have ended. But most conversations today are surface level, rushed, and distracted. We trade opinions without listening. We ask questions we don't wait to hear answered. We skim the surface of each other while pretending to connect. Brooks challenges this cultural norm by offering a blueprint for conversations that go deeper, feel richer, and lead to genuine intimacy. It begins, he says, with intentionality, the quiet decision to bring your whole self into the interaction, not just your voice or your agenda. The first step is asking better questions, not how was your day, but what did today teach you? Not what do you do, but what drew you into that path? These questions invite reflection, not reflex. They open doors instead of closing them. Second, Brooks stresses the power of emotional mirroring. When someone shares vulnerability, respond with warmth, not solutions. Echo the emotion, not just the content. If they speak of fear, meet them with safety. If they speak of hope, meet them with encouragement. This creates resonance, the sense that two hearts are beating in rhythm. Third, he highlights the role of pauses. Silence in a conversation is not empty, it's fertile. It gives room for thoughts to ripen and truths to surface. Don't rush to fill every gap. Some of the most meaningful things emerge only when we're patient enough to wait. Brooks also addresses the courage it takes to be honest. Real conversation demands risk, the willingness to share a piece of your true self. It's easier to stay guarded, to wear masks of politeness or sarcasm. But walls block connection. And when you offer sincerity, you invite it in return. He offers examples of transformative conversations, ones that shifted relationships, healed wounds, redefined understanding. Not because of eloquence, but because of presence, authenticity, and shared curiosity. One particularly moving story is of two strangers on a train, one elderly, one young. What started as a comment about the weather evolved into a deep exchange about regret, lost love, and resilience. They stepped off that train not as passengers, but as witnesses to each other's humanity. Moments like these, Brooks says, are always possible if we're willing to reach beneath the surface. He concludes with a powerful reminder: every conversation is an opportunity to honor the person in front of you. To see them not as a role, not as a demographic, but as a living, breathing story. And when we do this, when we craft conversations that are slow, sincere, and spacious, we don't just become better talkers. We become better people. More open, more kind, more alive. Because in the end, knowing someone deeply isn't about extracting facts. It's about entering their world with reverence and staying long enough to let love grow. Conclusion: the human art of seeing deeply. After all the chapters, insights, and stories, one truth remains steady at the heart of this book. To know a person is the most sacred task we are given as human beings. It's not a skill reserved for therapists, philosophers, or spiritual leaders. It's a daily, intentional practice available to anyone who chooses to slow down, open up, and care. David Brooks doesn't just teach us how to observe others. He invites us to honor them, to treat each individual as a mystery worth exploring, a soul with battles we can't see, dreams they barely speak, and brilliance waiting to be noticed. Knowing someone isn't about labeling or judging. It's not about defining them by roles, opinions, or appearances. It's about learning to ask better questions, to listen without interruption, to care without condition, and above all, to be present without distraction. In a world growing louder and faster, where people scroll past each other instead of looking into each other's eyes, the choice to deeply know someone becomes an act of quiet rebellion. It's a return to something sacred. Something human? Something true? And it changes lives. When someone feels truly seen, their soul expands. Their voice strengthens. They become more of who they were always meant to be. And so do we. Brooks reminds us that relationships aren't built in big, dramatic gestures. They're built in thousands of tiny moments. A glance that says, "I notice you." A question that says, "I care." A silence that says, "I'm here." To know a person is to carry their story with respect. To see their pain without flinching. To celebrate their uniqueness without envy. To hold the contradictions with grace. This book is more than a guide, it's a call. A call to return to the art of attention. To turn our lives into safe harbors for others. To become the kind of people who don't just pass by others, we see them. We stay. We connect. Because in the end, the measure of a life is not how much we've accomplished, but how deeply we've known, and how fully we've loved. So go out into the world with open eyes, open ears, and an open heart. Not to impress. Not to fix. But simply to know. And in that knowing, may you find more beauty, more healing, and more belonging than you ever imagined possible.